Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show with guest host Bill Ryder on CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome into the Jim Rome Show. Bill Ryder filling in. The program is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. One of my favorite guys that I got to know when I was doing television is Andy Roddick, Hall of Famer, American tennis legend, on Twitter at Andy Roddick. Good dude, and very, very graciously making some time on this Friday. Andy, what's up, buddy?
Bill, you're still doing sports shows.
Yeah, Andy, they're still letting me, despite all the evidence to the contrary all those years ago.
I cannot believe it. I mean, I thought Fed maybe beating Nadal would have been the biggest upset of the day, but it's Bill Ryder hosting this show.
The moment that they canceled was it the Bill Ryder and Andy Roddick podcast, or was it the other way around?
I feel like whatever's better, that's where my name was.
I think it was Roddick. It was Roddick and that guy. I don't even think my name was on there. Roddick and some random dude. So we saw Nadal. I mean, it's clay. He dominated Roger today. Is there any? Can you draw any conclusions about the Nadal Federer matchup over time when the event is on clay?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think it's a different conversation. I think on clay, off clay is, you know, Rafa, I think, is the best ever on a given surface. Like, the toughest matchup in tennis history would be anyone against Rafa on that court, 3 out of 5 sets. You know, I think Roger came back and played on clay because he wanted that match. But, the wind was blowing about 40 miles an hour today. And when I first started watching on TV, you couldn't even tell. I mean, Roger actually played great the first 2 sets. But it's just such a tough matchup. Everything that Roger does well against most people doesn't really work against Rafa, especially on clay. And it was a clinic today with Rafa. I mean, it was just a masterclass of tennis.
Andy Roddick here on the show. Andy, for people who don't know, who don't follow tennis day to day, what is the big difference between clay versus the other surfaces, and why does it pose challenges for a lot of players, including Roger Federer?
Yeah, I mean, we're saying it challenges Roger Federer. He's probably top five all time on clay. It's just a matter of him running into Rafa at the same time. But the movement is number one. Sliding around, you know, I was kind of a bigger bodied guy, grew up on hard courts. I like to stop and start, you know, kind of without gracefully sliding into a ball. Rafa's court coverage, if he gets 3 or 4 feet extra of slide, you just can't get the ball past him. The ball plays slower on clay, so he has more time to kind of set up and create spin. And obviously with the massive topspin he creates, he can make the court wider. His ball that kind of jumps up and away from Roger's backhand, cross-court forehand, is just a nightmare on any surface, but especially on clay when he can kind of really work the spin and have time to kind of create. Everything that he does well gets better when he steps onto a clay court.
Andy Roddick here on the show. Andy, is it hyperbole to say that we're watching an era of singles men's tennis where three of the best three or three of the best four singles players in the history of the game are competing?
Well, yeah, but that's only backed up by statistics, Bill. You're looking at 2017 and 15, and we're not finished yet. The conversation has changed so quickly. You know, if you talk about the best ever in any sport, it becomes a generational argument most of the time. These three guys have kind of made it a generational argument, you know, with who's the best between these three. And they both dominated in different ways and different playing styles. And I hope people enjoy it, because it really is a golden age of men's tennis. I know people don't like hearing that from the States because they want an American in there, but it really is a golden era, and it's something that I think people will be talking about for decades and decades to come.
Andy, for your money, in a vacuum, who do you think the best of those three players is?
It's just so hard. It's matchup based, and honestly, when I get asked this question, people are obsessed with defining who's the best and lists and all that stuff. But that'd be like trying to give away Oscar for best movie when you've watched like 70% of the movie. You don't even see the ending. It's a fool's errand at this point. I mean, right now, you know, you take the Grand Slams, you take the Grand Slams in hand. You know, you take the 20 from Roger, but I was wrong because I thought the way that Rafa plays, and he's so physical and so demanding on the body, I didn't think he'd be playing at the age that he's playing at. Roger, it's a little easier to understand because he plays a little more gracefully and it doesn't take the toll. But I mean, kudos to Rafa. I mean, he's going for 12 French Opens on Sunday. You think of someone like Bjorn Borg, he won 11 Grand Slams total. John McEnroe won 7 Grand Slams total. Rafa's going for 12 at one event.
It's Andy Roddick here on the show. Andy, we have this disagreement here at the show. We're all tennis fans, and there are some Federer fans here. There are some Rafa fans here. There's been some spirited, angry tennis conversations. And one of the things we've heard behind the scenes is, oh, Nadal has won, as you pointed out, 11 and maybe soon to be 12 of his 17 or 18 at the French. And that takes away a little bit historically from his greatness. Where do you come down on that, one way or the other?
Yeah, I don't think the numbers lie. That's like punishing a team for having a great home record. It just doesn't make any sense. If they get home court advantage and they take advantage of it, then they're the best team. That's just the way it works. I think this argument, and, you know, if I had to take a side of it, I could probably argue a case for any of them. But I think people start with who their favorite is out of those people, whether you're a Roger fan or you're a Rafa fan or you're a Novak fan. I feel like you start there, and then you try to kind of manipulate your argument to fit that fandom. And it's actually a testament to all three guys that there's an argument to be made for all of them. I mean, Rafa's coming up on, you know, you think it looks like he's going to win, his 18th slam. Novak has a winning head-to-head record against Rafa, Roger, and Andy Murray, all head-to-head. I mean, I don't know how you argue that if he gets to 20. And Roger's sitting there with the most and most titles. And, you know, it's just you can make the argument either way, and it's going to be pretty cool over the next year or two to see how history shakes out.
Andy Roddick on the show, who can confirm that I have said some stupid things in my day, including, Andy, once to you when I first met you, and you were really gracious with your response when I said, how long is Roger Federer's career over? That must have been 6 years ago or 5 years ago, so I'm done pretending to know how long these athletes in these various sports are going to be great. He's 37. I think he turns 38 at some point at the end of the summer. How long can he keep doing this?
It's interesting. I mean, I think with the fact that you need to provide content every day on a radio show, but then once you leave that radio show, you have to provide content on Twitter. And there's just this constant cycle of almost having to create something. So, you know, we're in such a hurry to put the all-time greats to bed now. I mean, look at what Tiger Woods did this year.
Yeah.
The one thing I've been able to draw down from what we've seen with Rafa, Roger, Serena, Tiger Woods, is that when healthy, talent wins. Now, as you get older, you're dealing with health issues. That's natural. Roger isn't, you know, the best player on earth every day anymore. He's just not. I think he would probably tell you that. But he's still been able to come back from knee surgery at the beginning of 17 and win 3 slams. He's still adding to his total slam count with the right conditions, with the right matchups, with the right court surface. He's still a threat in any grand slam. And, you know, tennis is better for it. I hope he stays around for 5 more years.
I did too. It was amazing watching him make this run. Andy Roddick, 2 quick questions for you. I know you got to run. First, and I know this is the kind of question you absolutely love, so I'm going to ask it with a smile. But best guess, which of these three men singles players do you think is most likely to end up with the most Grand Slam wins?
It's, you know what it is? It's tough to take health as like a given.
Right.
Right? So, you know, am I going to sit here and say, yeah, Rafa's definitely going to win 3 more over the next 2 years? I just can't say he's absolutely everything is going to go perfectly. So, you know, it has nothing to do with the three guys. It has a simple thing like I'd rather have a dollar in hand. So I'd go with the guy who has 20 right now. Just because he's already banked them. Would it surprise me if any of them ended up with 21, 22? No, it wouldn't. I mean, I think Novak, the story that's underlooked in this entire French Open is that if he wins this tournament and he's in a struggle, I think they're still at a rain delay with Dominic Thiem right now, but I think they're one set all. But if he wins this tournament, it's the second time he's won the 4 slams consecutively. That's insane. And he's like the third Beatle. Like, he doesn't get talked about as much as the other guys. What he's doing is insane and doesn't get talked about enough.
Yeah, he is my favorite of the three for whatever random reason. Andy Roddick on the show. Andy, last question for you. Serena, her return after becoming a mom, not an easy thing to do. And again, I know it's hard to know, but what do you think the likelihood is that the greatest, for me, women's player, maybe greatest tennis player of all time, wins another Grand Slam in her career?
I think she will. I definitely think she will. I don't think it was ever going to be the French Open again. I think she's very selective about her schedule with what she plays. I mean, she hardly plays outside of the Grand Slams, and people treat it as if her comeback, she hasn't quite gotten there. She came back after a serious pregnancy where she had complications that were, it almost cost her a life. And, oh, by the way, hardly played tennis and made the finals of Wimbledon and the U.S. Open. If she's able to kind of be healthy enough and ramp up training just a bit and maybe get a couple more matches going into Wimbledon and especially the U.S. Open, I would happily take that bet with whoever says she's not going to win again.
Hey, buddy, very very cool of you to make time. It's echoes of the Andy Roddick and that Random Guy podcast from back in the day. I'm with you, man. My wife and I remain shocked I'm doing this for a living. Thank you for contributing to that continuation, however brief it will be.
Bill, you're the best. Thanks, man.
Thanks, buddy. Andy Roddick on the show. Yeah, and he's right. We are in a golden era, an absolute golden era of men's singles tennis. I like golf. I like tennis. I'll watch them anyway. But there's a lot of people who wouldn't watch golf, and I get it, if Tiger Woods weren't Tiger Woods. I don't understand why that doesn't apply to men's singles tennis. If you're a sports fan, if you like greatness, it's a time to occasionally tune in. I love Djokovic. I think he's incredible. I know Federer's the best. I know he's the best right now. I just don't want him to be. I don't know why. I think he's too perfect. He's Tom Brady without any of the weirdness. Great guy, good-looking dude, makes it easy, super polite. He's too perfect. He's like the guy in my neighborhood who's super rich. This guy's a real person who works as he is an actual rocket scientist trying to like build rockets to go to Mars. He runs ultra marathons, and his wife is a former Miss, I don't know, California, Montana, who's a heart surgeon. Like, really, bro? Can there be something about you that's not perfect? That's the Federer thing for me. I would love Djokovic to just smoke Nadal. He's got to get there. It would be such a beautiful, beautiful thing. Thank you to Andy Roddick for making time. Very cool of him. Andy obviously won a U.S. Open Hall of Famer and a really good dude on Twitter. And funny on Twitter. You know, a lot of these famous people are on Twitter, Magic Johnson, and tweet out the most inane, just like, I like potato chips. Roddick is really funny, and he's worth a follow if you're so inclined, at Andy Roddick. I'm neither funny nor probably quite as interesting, but I'm on there. If you're on there, want to throw a little mercy, follow Sports Writer Sports, R-E-I-T-E-R, Bill Ryder filling in for Jim Rome. I do want to get back to this idea of domination. And for me, I've got this answer, which team I think can be the next great dynasty in American sports. If you've got an answer, who replaces the Warriors or the Patriots when those teams give up their grip, their hold on their sports? 1-800-636-8686, rome@haveatake.com, 1-800-636-8686. My surprise choice for future dynasty of the next 10 years when we come back to the Jim Rome Show next on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Jim Rome Show, Bill Ryder filling in on this Friday. Clones, I can't wait for this. Smack-Off 25 is proudly presented by our friends at Vivid Seats. And this year, Vivid Seats is giving every Smack-Off caller that makes the air on June 21st $50 towards the purchase of tickets on VividSeats.com or the Vivid Seats app. Now, can't tell you who will win the Smack-Off, but we can guarantee a first-class experience with Vivid Seats because they back up every purchase with a 100% buyer guarantee. Download the Vivid Seats app or visit VividSeats.com. Thank you to Andy Roddick for just making some time. I just sent him a text, probably ill-advised. For the last 4 years, we've had this $500 bet that I can beat him in tennis if he uses a skillet or a frying pan. And I'm just trying to get my mind around. I know Andy Roddick's a professional athlete. I know he was the number one player in the world. But I keep telling myself, if you can just get the ball over the net, and I'm a little bit better than that, you should be able to win a $500 bet with a guy with a frying pan. A frying pan? I've got all these stupid bets out there with these guys that I used to work with at Fox Sports 1 when I was there. Gary Payton and I have a $500 bet that I can score on him in one-on-one in a game to 11 by ones and two by ones. Just every other, I have to score one time. No one, not even my wife, believes that I can win that bet. But I figure, I mean, what is Gary Payton in this GP, 50 of these days? He's probably in better shape than I am, though. Got an 50. I feel like I can get by him one time. He told me he would physically hurt me, though, that he would just lean on me and it'd be a real physical thing. I feel like the Roddick bet makes a lot more sense. So we've been talking Warriors domination and whether it's going to come to an end. And it will at some point. The Patriots and what has been just their continued hold on the AFC and the NFL is amazing. But like Roger Federer, who we just talked to Roddick about, at some point, the force behind that run, Tom Brady, has to get old. And I was trying to figure out who it is that will be the dominant sports team in this country over the next 5 or 10 years. And I scoured the NFL, and I suppose in the NFL you could go with the Kansas City Chiefs, although they've lost so many guys to dysfunctional behavior off the field. Don't know that I buy that. And I love Andy Reid. And Patrick Mahomes might be the most exciting player in sports right now. But am I really going to bet that Andy Reid is going to make a run to multiple 3, 4, 5 Super Bowls in the next decade and win a bunch of them? I'm not. It's not the Rams, even though I think Sean McVay is every bit the genius he was before he got owned by Belichick. And those kind of losses and moments, I think they shape real greatness. Defeat matters as much as success for people that go to that Jordan level, that LeBron level, that all-time great level. But I'm not betting on Jared Goff. It's not the Cowboys. Sorry, Cowboys fans. Dak Prescott's not going to be the leader and face and catalyst behind that. In the NBA, I don't think there's going to be a dominant team once the Warriors fall off. The news, it's not new, but the previous collective bargaining agreement between the owners and the players in the NBA, it is designed for parity. What happened, the reason the Warriors happened, is just this one-time, incredibly crazy statistical anomaly where you got guys like Steph and Draymond and Clay who weren't drafted that high, and then when all this money came in from the television revenue, BRI, the basketball-related income, went way up, and it created this one-time opportunity to bring in Kevin Durant. That's not happening again. I think baseball is the place where there can be some domination. And I know I'm probably supposed to say the Houston Astros here are the team that are built for the future in the next 10 years. I just don't believe it because the American League is so, so tough. Every single year, and we saw this last year, it can be the Red Sox, it can be the Astros, it can be the Yankees. Tampa Bay has been awesome, especially if you go back to August of last year. Tampa Bay is on this incredible run. Teams that can give you a hiccup. I don't buy the National League, and I'm a Cubs fan. That Cubs starting pitching is unreliable, and as it relates to John Lester, at least old, the bullpen's bad. They have a core of young guys. I think the team that is going to be the dominant sports force in this country for the next 10 years is the Los Angeles Dodgers. This is a group that has the best pitching staff in baseball by a wide margin. Clayton Kershaw only has the third best earned run average on that team. They are young in the obnoxious extreme. Walker Buehler, young dude. Julio Urias, who's going to be a Cy Young level guy, is 22. Cody Bellinger is young. Corey Seager is young. Max Muncy is young. Jock Peterson is young. Cody Bellinger, who's the best player, the second best player in baseball. I know Jerry Harrison Jr. was on the show here on the Jim Rome Show with me, Bill Rutter, filling in. Jerry said last hour that you need several years to be the better player than Mike Trout. And I think maybe it's a different way to look at it. And some, it's almost semantics. Today, this moment in time, it's Cody Bellinger. And whatever Bellinger is going to be over the next 5 years as compared to Mike Trout, he's going to be a perennial MVP candidate. This Dodgers team went out and by adjusting the way, and this is the thing about Andrew Friedman, their president of operations. He is a sabermetrician, total stat geek, absolutely into the numbers, but he's not beholden to them, like some of the organizations and some of the folks who live by analytics and sabermetrics and the numbers. He actually uses the data to try to craft solutions and be ahead of the curve. This Dodgers team has failed in the World Series the last 2 years, in part because they couldn't get runners across the plate, especially in high-leverage situations. Last year, the Dodgers were 26 in baseball with runs driven in, with runners on and two outs, which is an incredibly important moment in the playoffs. They're first this year in that category. Last year, they were 25th in driving runners in, an RBI, with two outs, just regardless of where they were. They're second this year. I could go on and on and on, but in terms of two strike, two out, runners on, high leverage situations, finding ways to plate runs that aren't easy to do, that simulate the stress in some ways of the postseason, Andrew Friedman's gone out, and he has worked with that coaching staff to turn the Dodgers from one of the worst teams in baseball in those moments, strikeouts is a big part of that, to one of the best. They are young. They are obnoxiously loaded. They have a ton of money. Andrew Friedman and co. Listen to this. I just want to read you this, because Friedman came in 2015, inherited the highest payroll at the time in baseball history. And he cut it from $266 million to $236 to $228 to $177 last year. Now, it went up this year because of the Kershaw contract. But my point is, the Dodgers are the youngest team in baseball that is this good and this dominant. They have a ton of money to spend when the time comes. And you saw this in their pursuit of Bryce Harper. Bryce Harper got his, whatever it was, 55-year deal in Philly. He'll be there until the next century, Kearns. Good for that guy. The Dodgers offered him a ridiculous, insane amount of money on a very short contract. Because they're not just playing to win, hopefully for them this year, but in the years ahead. And the National League just isn't that impressive. And I know the Brewers are great. Brewers fans, I get it. I understand. Yelich is a stud. But you're built for a shorter window. The Cubs are going to have an offense that's going to be a challenge for anybody they go up against for 5 years. But the pitching staff is aging. Same for that Astros team. I understand that their young offensive core is young. But that pitching staff have some guys who are not going to be doing this in 5 or 10 years, to say the least. And that's where the Dodgers had this unbelievable advantage. They found a way to build a winner, to continue a winner. They've won, what, five? I can't even keep track. Five consecutive NL West divisions? It's insane. While making their team younger, with more upside, and a whole bunch of money to spend. You heard it here on the Jim Rome Show first. The Dodgers in 10 years or 8 or 5, we're going to look back because they're going to keep making World Series. They're going to start winning World Series, and it's going to be really, really obnoxious. And there's some statistical luck that comes in. Sabermetricians and old-school baseball guys don't agree on much. They do agree on this. When you make the playoffs, it becomes in some ways a crapshoot of momentum and luck and timing. The whole sample size thing is a lot easier to calculate and to build around over 162 regular season games than it is a playoffs run, where a lucky hit here or there, a mistake in the shift, a home run or not, can be the difference in a series. The Dodgers have built their team into a group that's going to be, at a minimum, somewhere in the range of NL pennant opportunities every single year. It's going to get, if you're not a Dodgers fan, and I'm not, I respect the organization. I used to talk about them on the radio here in L.A., it's going to get really old and really annoying. 1-800-636-8686 is the phone number. Bill Rutter filling in here on the Jim Rome Show. We just had Andy Roddick. He's great. We're going to talk to another incredible athlete, success story, great guest, Penny Hardaway, former NBA player, now the men's basketball coach down in Memphis. Going to hop on the Jim Rome Show with me, Bill Rutter, in just a moment after this CBS.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show with guest host Bill Ryder on CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome back into the show. Happy Friday. Bill Ryder filling in for Jim on Twitter, Sports Ryder, Sports R-E-I-T-E-R. I've got a television show, a streaming sports show on CBS Sports HQ coming up today at 5 Eastern, 2 Pacific. Check it out. Apple, Roku, all those happy streaming places. We're going to talk to Penny Hardaway in a minute. Howard Beck, who's awesome, from Bleach Report, in 25 minutes or so. I have talked to Jerry Harrison Jr. today. I've talked to Andy Roddick, of course. If you miss any of the program, you want to hear it again, jimrome.com, radio.com. We're at 1-800-636-8686. Email rome@havatake.com. And Jim on Twitter, Jim Rome. Again, I'm on there, sports in my last name, which is writer, sports, R-E-I-T-E-R. I like the Warriors. I almost would say that I'm a fan of that team. Just not the team. I love the style of play. I love the ball movement. I love the level of defense when they've actually won championships and how it undercuts the stupidity of people who don't watch the NBA and pretend that it's a bunch of athletes who don't share the ball and don't play defense, which is garbage about something else. I love what the Warriors do and what they're about. And I'm so sick and tired of these guys winning NBA championships. I hope they win this particular series because I have money on them. And just selfishly, I would like to cash that ticket. But what feels like looking not that far into the future as an NBA, like an NBA, that has the opportunity for a multitude of teams to at least squint their eyes and pretend they're going to win, can compete for an NBA championship, that is the NBA that I want. Hockey, incredibly, incredibly exhilarating and hard to predict. The NFL, outside of, you know, betting on the Patriots will do you pretty well. Every year there are surprises and things we don't see coming. And the reason the National Football League is such a force, is such an overwhelming presence in our sports culture, is in large part because wherever you are, whatever your market size, you have an actual chance to be competitive in an upcoming season. It's very unlikely, unless you're the Browns, and that seems to be turning, that you're going to go something in the neighborhood of a generation without having a team that's got a chance. Major League Baseball has that problem. Opposite union situations, baseball and the NFL. I'm a Cubs fan, so I'm good, right? My team's got money. My team's a big market. But if you're not a Boston fan, a Houston fan, a Yankees fan, a Dodgers fan, and whatever random team is kind of competing in the American League Central, you're probably not going to have year after year after year of hope. Parity is what makes all of these various leagues interesting, surprising, fun. And we got a little bit, a tiny bit of a glimpse of that when we were following that Eastern Conference run. That turned out to be the Raptors' time. But Philly was really good. I never really bought Philly. I never really bought the Sixers. If I'm that Sixers front office, I think Tobias Harris, who's not the player Jimmy Butler is, there's still a Jimmy Butler locker room thing. That's a real thing. And by all accounts, it sounds like Butler's a lot more inclined to be a Laker or go somewhere else. But that Sixers team with a core of Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid can be really good in the years ahead. It wouldn't hurt. It wouldn't be the worst thing in the world if Ben Simmons learned to shoot a jump shot. I think the Celtics are a championship caliber team without Kyrie Irving. In fact, the numbers and the stats bear out. If you dive into the data, they're better without Kyrie. Losing record for the Celtics when Kyrie took 20 or more shots this season. Postseason and regular season, and obviously combined. So you move on from Kyrie. Kyrie and KD team up somewhere. That team's a challenger. Boston becomes a challenger. Philly's interesting. Toronto, if they have Kawhi, and if Kawhi goes to a place like the Clippers, they're going to be incredibly competitive. All right, we'll circle back to that in a sec. Want to welcome on four-time former NBA All-Star and the Memphis men's basketball coach, Penny Hardaway. Coach, happy Friday. Thanks for making time for us.
No, thank you. Happy Friday to you guys as well.
We're just talking about parity around sports and whether or not the Warriors are going to give up their hold on the NBA. And I guess some of that we'll see over the course of the next few days and next week or so. What have you made, Coach, of the NBA Finals so far?
It's been very interesting because there's been a lot of tactics that have been used by Toronto. There's been some tactics that have been used by Golden State as well. But I think it's been very very amusing, honestly, to the fan because in itself, both coaches are pulling out everything to try to get this ring, to try to get this championship.
Yeah, Nick Nurse, Penny Hardaway here on the Jim Rome Show, Bill Ryder filling in. Penny, Nick Nurse pulled out a box and won. That happens at the – when's the last time you got – at the college level, you guys rolled out a box and won?
I haven't done it in college yet, but I wouldn't put it past myself to do it. It depends on what the situation was. And I understood why he did it. I don't know why he got ridiculed for it, because to me it was being smart, and I don't think they scored while they were in it. I mean, you can't stay in the full game, but I think if you use it for 5-6 minutes, you're down, you're trying to get back into the game, you say, hey, we got to stop Steph, and Steph will make you do something like that to that extreme. And so I wasn't – as a coach and as a basketball mind, I understood where he was coming from, but it did shock me a little bit that he did it. But I wasn't mad at him.
Coach, I'm with you. It was effective for 4 or 5 minutes. It really stifled that Warriors offense. Penny Hardaway here on the show. We've a report came out, an article came out talking about Kawhi Leonard's unique, I guess it's talking smack skills. I mean, it's he calls himself board man, and he sort of talks in monosyllabic speak to opponents to get in their head. When you were playing, what was some of the weirdest ways you heard guys effectively talk some smack on the floor?
I don't think they had any guys doing it the weird way, because back then it was just straight trash talk. There were no there were no special ways to do it except for just to talk it, and then you had to back it up. So nowadays it's different, and you know, it's totally different. Back then it was just straight trash talk. There was no playing around.
Coach, we've had a refocus with Kevin Durant's injury on Steph Curry and where he ranks how he should be regarded all time in the history of the game. Andre Iguodala has called him the second best point guard of all time and has said that Andre's playing through injuries to protect Steph's legacy, and we've heard a lot of that talk and people pushing back. You played at a really, really high level, needless to say. For you, how do you view Steph Curry in the history and the greater history of the game of basketball?
I review him very high. I mean, I love Steph Curry for everything that he stands for, not only because he can shoot the ball, but who he is on the court, who he is off the court, how hard he works on his game continuously because he knows that he has a continually because he has a target on his back. And to be able to come out and perform on a nightly basis when everybody's scrutinizing you, and I've been on that level, I hold him at a very high standard. He's one of my favorite players to watch. I definitely try to tell my guards to watch how he moves without the ball, how he keeps energy in the ball when he has it. He tries not to stand around. He's a total team guy when he's on the bench. That's all a part of being one of the greatest. He's always for his teammates, always engaged, always celebrating. So when saying all of that, he's really high, definitely.
Penny Hardaway here on the show. Coach, when you're working with young players, when you're recruiting players, when you're working AAU circuits, who are the players, who are the pros that have most influenced the style of play of the guys that you're around, you're recruiting, you're coaching?
The pros that have influenced the style of play?
Yeah.
That I have?
For the players that you're actually recruiting, the guys at Memphis, the guys you're trying to go out there and get, who are the young players today, the 15, 16, 17, 18-year-old basketball players trying to emulate?
They're trying to emulate Steph. Steph, KD, you know they're going to only try to emulate the best. You don't really have any guys in this era, especially five-star players, that are trying to emulate somebody that's a non-all-star or a guy that might get it done in his own way but doesn't have a big name. To me, in today's game, these guys try to emulate Steph, Damian Lillard, Klay Thompson, Kevin Durant, LeBron. There's not too many young players. Maybe nowadays, you know, they're trying to emulate Ben Simmons or Jason Tatum or guys like that. But for the most part, they're going to emulate the big, big boy.
Memphis men's basketball coach Penny Hardaway here on the program on the Jim Rome Show. Bill Ryder filling in. Coach, want to talk some college hoops. Last pro question for you. Raptors are up 2-1. Clay's probably almost certainly playing tonight is what we're hearing, what we've heard. We know this Golden State team has been here before. Who do you think actually wins this series?
Man, you can never bet against the champions because they've been there. And, of course, they're injury-riddled right now, so you kind of tip your hat towards Toronto if they stay injured. But if Clay plays and is halfway healthy, I mean, these guys just know how to get their shots, man. They've tried to do it in the first couple games and couldn't stop them, so... To me, you can't go against the champs. Toronto will have to take it. Golden State won't give it to them. The only game I think that they'll be given was game 3, where, you know, Clay sat out, and then the role players just didn't step up for Golden State. But I think as long as Clay is on the floor, it gives them an extra weapon. It's going to be really tough to beat those guys.
Coach, obviously the Warriors have revolutionized the game, particularly at the NBA level, with spacing and three-point shooting and ball movement. And we've seen some of that, certainly at the college level. But now we've got the three-point line moving back to the international level spacing. What do you think that's going to do for the college game? How do you think it's going to change things with that three-point line moving back a little bit?
It's going to change tremendously because we weren't fortunate enough to make it to the NCAA this year, but we did make it to the NIT, and we played those rules where you had the international rules where the three-point line was pushed back. And it's definitely going to drop the percentages of a lot of guys. Guys are really going to have to get in the gym and work on that distance. Those few, feet back are going to make a big difference to a lot of the guys because guys aren't shooting at a high clip where it is now. So to move it back is going to be more challenging to the guys, but it's going to get them prepared for the guys that are trying to go to the next level.
Do you anticipate, Penny Hardaway, that because of that line moving back and just the development of the game, the evolution of the game, do you think the college game will speed up even more over the next few years?
I want it to speed up, yeah. That's also what they did in the NIT. They did the rules to where the shot clock went back to 20. It didn't reset full. So they're trying to speed the game up. So definitely I know the college game will be getting sped up for sure over the next couple of years.
Penny Hardaway here on the Jim Rome Show. Coach, one of the things I've heard guys say who, like you, played at a really high level and were able to bend the game to their will, whatever game it was, that when they made that transition to coaching to the front office, there was an adjustment in the learning curve of, oh, man, I can't just step out on the court and do this. Teaching and recruiting is a different thing. What has been the hardest and what has been the most rewarding part of transitioning from being involved in the game as a player where you're actually physically doing the work to being a coach, and at the end of the day, your guys are going to walk across that line and they're going to do what they're going to do?
Well, obviously, the hardest thing for any guy that played at a high level is to have the patience with the kids when you're teaching, because kids, you have to continually tell them over and over again the same thing. And sometimes it gets frustrating because they're not locking in and getting the mental side of the game. And then the kids nowadays are entitled. They don't work as hard. So when you get a kid that you have to tell the same thing over and over again, it gets tough. And you got to coach energy. You got to coach effort. And that's one thing that a coach doesn't want to do. So when you have those type of kids, you have those situations, it gets frustrating. The rewarding thing of it is the teaching part, to teach the kids how to get better, to teach the kids and see them grow in the game off the court and in the court mentally and physically. That's the rewarding part.
You had a great first recruiting class, and it's a process building the winner. You mentioned NIT, but not the NCAA tournament. We're not a very patient society, but building winners takes time. How do you feel about the program and what you think we're going to see this upcoming season and the years ahead?
I feel really good about my program, having the number one recruiting class in the country. That was a big deal for me. Even though they're all young guys, you get a lot of talent. If you can coach them properly, then they'll win. And the one thing you're going to see with us is we're going to be running. We're going to be a high up-tempo team, sharing the basketball, moving without the basketball, and high energy on defense. So we're going to have an NBA offense, but a college defense, because the league doesn't play defense like college, for sure.
Coach Penny Hardaway, really appreciate the time. On Twitter at IAmOneCent, the number one. Congratulations on your success and that recruiting class. Looking forward to watching you guys do your thing. I think it's the third time I've got to interview across a multitude of platforms in the last year. So thank you yet again for making some time. Appreciate you, Coach.
No, thank you so much for having me.
Penny Hardaway on the show. I love college. I love college basketball. And when I was a newspaper reporter in Kansas City at the Kansas City Star, I spent a lot of time writing feature stories and various stories and covering college hoops. So I'm saying this as a guy who is a fan of the sport, who loves the sport, and as a fan of a lot of individual coaches around the country. The sport needs to evolve. I love that they're moving the three-point line back. The shorter the shot clock at the college level, the better for me. Human beings evolve. We get faster, we get bigger, we get stronger, we get smarter at the things, the information that we need, and whatever endeavors we're pursuing. It is long past time for the college game to, if not catch up to the NBA, at least acknowledge that the game needs to be faster, much, much faster. And that Penny Hardaway program in Memphis, watch out. Incredible recruiting classes for Penny Hardaway, a guy that played the game, has a real connection with his athletes. Carson Wentz, and good for this guy, right? That dude got paid in a serious way. And that's what happens when you are a future face of the franchise, when you're a great quarterback or you have the potential to be one. but it's a mistake, or at least it's going to be a challenge for the Eagles to build a winner as a result. We'll go into, and this is, as Andy Roddick said, this pesky thing called facts, why paying quarterbacks a ton of money is often not a road to success. It's coming up on the Jim Rome Show. Bill Rutter filling in next on CBS Sports Radio.